Now, Julian Hallam is Associate Professor and Faculty Fellow in the Faculty of Information Technology at QUT. She's currently Project Leader for an international research study to investigate the development and use of e-portfolios in education and the professions. Her teaching and research interests focus on the management and evaluation of information services, e-learning, and on a range of professional and workforce issues in the library and information sector. Julian has won a number of University Teaching Excellence Awards. And prior to joining QUT, she worked as a librarian in the corporate sector, managing business and legal information. She's past president of ALIA, many of you will know her in that role, and serves on both ALIA's Education and Professional Development Standing Committee and the Education and Training Standing Committee on the International Federation of Library, IFLA. I can't do that. And Gillian's a fellow of the Higher Education Research and Development Society of Australasia, a member of the Australian Law Library, Librarians Association and CILIP in the UK and the Special Libraries Association in the United States. So I think you'll see Gillian's a very busy person. Both speakers will be focusing on the future of cataloguing, education and training, input from surveys of the profession. Please welcome Jill.
Thank you very much, Anne. I've probably got to come down a little bit for this. So thank you for the opportunity to join you all today. Yesterday I was actually in Sydney, which was probably the most stupid place in the world to be. But the event I was speaking at was actually the teacher librarians with the Independent Schools Association of New South Wales. And it was really interesting building on some of the things that Karen was talking about their perspective of where they think the information sphere is going to go. And I think there are immense challenges. I mean, basically, teacher librarians, if they're forward-looking, are actually in that space where all the students are already. And that is immense, I think, in terms of the challenges that we're going to have to face in terms of where information is going in the future. So that's just as a quick aside. As you can see from the title of the paper, today I'm going to sort of draw on some of the insights from the Nexus survey, which was a survey that went out to information professionals last year here in Australia. I'm very sensitive to the time that we've only got sort of a quarter of an hour to really do the sort of cover some of those issues. The report that I've done for ALIA at the moment that's just being finalised is about 180 pages. So it's going to be very fast and furious to even try to sort of scratch the surface with some of the topics that are there. But we'll see how we go. In terms of the workforce as a whole, certainly I'll draw on some of the comments that Karen made about the demographics of our profession here in Australia. But basically, if we're going to plan for the future, the argument is we need to know where we're at today and that we can't sort of really plan effectively as to what our requirements are going to be. So we'll look at some of the key findings, specifically drilling down into those respondents from the survey that indicated that they were working with in that technical services area, if you like. The background to it, why we sort of started doing some things here in Australia, just the list there on the screen indicates the wide range of workforce planning research that's been going on in other countries. Canada was leading the way with their human resource study called the 8 R's. UK has had their recruit, retain and lead project and a few other things. And the IMLS has been funding a number of different projects at the moment in the United States. So there's things happening in sort of regional associations as well as at the national level. Here in Australia, in 2004, we had a study amongst the Latin libraries, so the ATN universities, so QUT, RMIT, UTS, Curtin, etc., University of South Australia, to look at some of the workforce and succession planning issues, which came up with a huge series of recommendations, including to do further research. State Library of Victoria has been working quite hard in that area as well, so we've been working with them. Lots of things happening at the local level, I'm aware of. So part of the argument was to avoid duplication of effort and to actually try and consolidate a lot of the information that we were able to gather across the country. The key was to capture about the people, basically. So not necessarily the skill sets per se, but the idea, who are we as a profession? What are the demographics? What's the educational background? What's the current employment and future outlook for those people, where they think they're going? And also, I suppose, retirement. That was one of the big issues. When do you think you might be leaving the profession as well? So that we could get that comprehensive. The word nexus, certainly, because nothing sits in isolation. I see it as a very tight relationship between education, curriculum, recruitment, retention, and the development of the workforce as a whole. So that all comes together, so hence the word. So for stage one, there's actually two stages in the project, and this is just about stage one. The key stakeholders were QUT, ALIA, and then Caval, based in Melbourne. And looking at the employment side of things, we're doing an institutional survey next, and that's supported by QUT, ALIA, and NSLA at this stage, National and State Libraries. So that's about to sort of start work on that. And there's been a study tour to work with the United States people and the UK people as well, which has been very valuable. As I say, we'll just go through that. So we launched the survey itself at the ALIA conference last year, so a year ago. It was a self-administered online questionnaire. And as I say, it looked at demographic, educational, and employment data. We got a very substantial 2,346 valid responses, which was an excellent response, I think, in terms of what we were able to achieve in that space of time. In terms of sector, the table there, the graph sort of shows the breakdown of those respondents by sector. So university and public libraries and special libraries were very highly represented, which was good to see. School libraries we were a little bit disappointed in because there's a lot of work happening out there. The School Libraries Association was promoting it, but they weren't, given the number of schools, almost 10,000 schools in Australia, not that they all have teacher librarians, but it was a fairly low response as a result, which we're talking to them about. So today's coverage looks very much, there was a question, a lot of the questions emulated the Canadian questions. We sought permission from the Canadian study to use their questions so that we could actually get some international comparisons following through from it as well. So one of the questions there looked at technical and bibliographic services and to the frequency in which the job function was performed. So in terms of database content and organisation of information resources, which obviously we're discussing this morning, and then also the creation and maintenance of bibliographic records. So the survey findings that I'll discuss today are based specifically on those two groups. And mainly, just because of the audience, the ones that are actually looking at the creation and maintenance of bibliographic records. In terms of those responses, as I say, 2,346 total, and then 707, so a very substantial number, basically indicated that they were working with bibliographic records. So certainly cataloguing is not dead in the water by any means. 630 indicate they're working in that database space, and 441 had the same responses for both of those questions, so that where they actually overlapped. Significantly, a lot more professionals, as you can see from the ratios there of the different percentages, about 75% to 80% were actually professional staff responding to that. In terms of the distribution across the sector of those respondents specifically, special libraries and school libraries were actually quite highly represented. And just to move on to the next slide, to get that comparison of the data based on the total, so all 2,346, and then the target group, as I refer to them, shows much more significant responses from special libraries and school libraries, which I presume is to be expected. Those people are actually working directly with the resources that they're describing and things like that. So, without being part of a large organisation. Just background to it, 7% were students and working currently in that area, and 23% were new graduates, so had qualified in the last 5 years. So that makes it an interesting comparison with some of the information that you've got, sort of saying that a lot have dropped in terms of working in those areas. And just because everybody always asks it, the gender ratio was 88%. I think across the board it was 85% female and 15% male, so slightly higher female ratio in your target group. Excuse me. The age profile, so we'll sort of look at those in a table form as well. But really there's a big mass in that sort of 36 to 55 age group, a very large number of people in that area. But encouragingly, there's still sort of 21% as being under 35, which is good to see. So that was one of the things that we had to consider, whether just having an online survey was actually going to attract more younger people because they're more comfortable doing online surveys. But we actually did receive, we've done the comparison with the age demographics across ABS data as well, and it was a good ratio. It was really quite well grounded, I think, in terms of the relationship between the age groups. A lot of you might be familiar with the Australia job search figures. You can link to that through the ALIA employment website. And that, up to date, has been the main source of employment data. I'm really looking forward to the census data coming out in the next few months, hopefully, to be able to look at some of those in more detail. But what the slide is arguing is that we do have a younger proportion of people across the profession, certainly here in Australia, and that not everyone's going to fall off the twig quite as quickly as they might do by 2010 anyway. We've got IFLA in 2010. Nobody can fall off the peg before then. Come on. So the career age, another way of looking at it was actually to look at career age. So comparing recent entrants with mid-career with senior career, which doesn't necessarily tally with age demographics. They're quite discrete in terms of what's represented. The figures at the bottom of the slide actually indicate that 40% of all new graduates indicated that they were in a career change situation. Okay, so it's not that they're coming straight from school or straight from university. 36% of those were over 40, and 31% of recent entrants, so in the profession, were over 40. So again, that does, you know, sort of have implications for the actual ratio of people, and also how long their working life is. You know, they're actually going to be in the profession for a shorter period of time than possibly others. But if we're all Generation Y going to sort of have 15 different jobs in the next 10 years, then that's an issue too. But basically, in the target group, so amongst cataloguers specifically, 46% were senior career workers, all right, so people who've been in the sector for more than 16 years. So I think that does have implications in terms of those things. In terms of workforce planning, there's a difference between the new entrants coming into the workplace and then that stable workforce that is at the end or moving into that sort of stage of their career. Just the turnover of people in the earlier stages of their career is quite telling, I think. 74% of the new entrants had been in their current job for less than 2 years, and then so in that five-year period, and then 49%, so half of them, had been in their job for less than a year. So that contrasts then quite significantly with the stable workforce end of in the senior career, where almost half of them had actually been in the same job for, you know, sort of more than 10 years. So there's, in terms of managing a workforce, there's quite different tensions happening in terms of what's required at looking at the skill set and the education and all of those type of things. The contract workers, again, also very important. 15% of new entrants are on contract, which is quite a substantial amount. The lowest level of contract work, interestingly, was actually Northern Territory, where you think it might be actually the highest. So some interesting bits there. The older workers, what's the situation with that? So obviously it's important that we attract and retain a skilled workforce. And I think it needs to be taken into the context of, do we actually need to change some of our workforce practices to encourage people not to fall off the twig in 2010, but to stay in the workplace and contributing in a different way, maybe in part-time mode, in job share mode, or different sorts of situations like that, not just assume that it's full-time or else. So it feeds into succession planning. And again, certainly that this here in Australia, we have a very low unemployment rate at the moment. It's still around 4%. And that's already having a significant impact on the availability of skills. And that's going to be one of the major things for the profession, I think, in the future, as if we want the brightest and best, how are we as a profession going to attract the brightest and best in to actually join us rather than go off to accounting or law or other careers which are going to pay, especially when there's government strategies, for example, here in Queensland in terms of the health sector, immense changes happening in terms of encouraging people into those areas. So there's lots of issues we need to consider. I'm sensitive to time, some more. So basically, very quickly on the retirement side, I suppose the figures at the bottom to sort of distill some of it. So 51% indicate that they'd like to retire by 2015 of the senior career, all right, only senior career, not the whole profession. So half of the senior career people hope to retire in the next 10 years, say. But that's actually, a lot of people are going to retire young. Okay, they're not going to stay until they're 65. So the age ratio was actually only 27%, so almost half that. So if they're coming into the career late and they're leaving early, what's their productive lifespan in the profession? So just how am I going for time?
Just a couple of minutes.
the slides are going to be up on the web, I understand. The slides, okay. Because obviously there's lots of rich data in here that, and some of it's interpreted in the paper that Stuart's going to follow on with as well. The paper does look at what skills are going to be lost, and that's very much at that senior managerial level, and I suppose the implication in terms of workforce planning. I think, Carol, you mentioned the idea that a lot of the cataloguers are going to be in those leadership and management type of roles, and so that sort of skill development is really important alongside the actual discipline knowledge that's referred to in sort of the rest of the discussion this morning. I think that needs to be considered. So just read those. One of the key bits here is to show that younger middle managers are actually getting more experience earlier than the older middle managers, which is quite an interesting situation, as if succession planning is already happening, that younger middle managers are given greater responsibility in a wider range of activities much earlier than their more stagnant older middle managers who are going to retire in the next 5 years. But again, you can get that in more detail. So there. Training and development, obviously that feeds into this sort of side, and I think participation in training was one of the big things, whether people participated in training often or very often, sometimes or never. The square bracket figures are all of the respondents in the whole survey, whereas the figures are the actual sort of your cohort of the target respondents. So it's interesting, I suppose, just to look, they're fairly similar, but 30% of people participate in formal activities, such as here, so we've got the ideal people here, often or very often, and informally in terms of workplace learning, 42% there. However, on the informal activities, on the other end of the scale and the formal activities, there are more people in your cohort are getting no training at all, getting no staff development activities. So I think that's an area that could potentially be addressed. But I'll wrap up. And also, just this graph is quite interesting in terms of professional engagement in relationship to training and development. It's clearly evident that if you're an involved, engaged professional, you're more likely to participate in training and development either from a voluntary basis that you self-select to actually go and do things. If you're not engaged in your profession, there's a higher likelihood that you just don't bother about training as well. So that's a message, I think, for Alia as well to consider. But I'll look at the rest. Basically, direct skills training obviously has a more strong impact on actual work performance rather than things down in the lower end, like mentoring is being encouraged with the sort of different generations, but people don't necessarily see it as terribly valuable at this stage. And that's about where people would like to go. Managerial aspirations... there's a lot of people who don't want to progress into management levels. That's another issue for the profession as well. But just to pull it all together, how do we get these, you know, bright young things in and operate in a situation? I suppose some of the graduates that I know who move into industry are disillusioned very quickly, very, very quickly with what they find actually in employment. and the best people have either gone overseas or are leaving the profession within 2 to 3 years. So that is a wake-up call, I think, for employers to realise what the newer generation is actually wanting to get out of their careers as they go as well, and to give them more responsibility and more ideas. You want the ideas to happen. Encourage them to do so. So early attrition is an issue. And then just how do we actually get that sort of, you know, the impact of staff retirement to work with the newer generation coming through, and how do we manage an intergenerational workforce, which is one of the other issues that we need to consider as well, where you've got these sort of people who want to do lots of new things and everything with a very stable workforce. It's an interesting model that we do have to work with along the way. Yeah, that's it. And that's just the conclusion then as well. So, but it leads straight in, I think, to what Stuart's going to discuss as well. But I'm welcome to discuss things afterwards at the end of the session as well. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Jill. We'll have questions after Stuart's presentation. Dr. Stuart Ferguson is a senior lecturer in information management and librarianship at Charles Sturt University. His professional experience includes library management positions in Scotland, South Africa, and Australia. He's currently associate head of school, School of Information Studies, and a program coordinator. His academic background is in politics and political theory, and he has a PhD in politics and aesthetics. Teaching experience includes information organisation and information and knowledge management, and research interests include information ethics, knowledge management, information politics, and the knowledge society. However, he makes time for writing and swimming. Please welcome Stuart.
Thanks, Anne, and thanks, Jo, for that extremely fast and informative paper. Can everybody hear me all right? In the back, yes. as Anne indicated, this is Philip Hyder's paper. He's very sorry not to be here, because I know this is something very dear to his heart. But he just couldn't be in two places at once. The bad news is that I will be reading the paper, but knowing Philip's passion for this subject, I'll try to inject a bit of passion into the reading. It responds to the Nexus Census findings outlined by Jill in her presentation. It notes her characterisation of the Australian information profession as in a state of flux, which is likely to be exacerbated as large numbers of librarians retire in the next decade, resulting in many opportunities for a new generation of information workers, but not necessarily in the same roles and positions. Many recent entrants to the profession are already changing jobs on a frequent basis, and it seems that the need for wide-ranging skill sets will only increase in years ahead. Fortunately, the profession also appears willing to take up the professional development opportunities that will help build these skill sets. However, Hallam's findings, Philip's also very formal, so I'll refer to you as Hallam. Hallam's findings also make it clear that a large percentage of the profession is still heavily engaged in what is termed here as information organisation or IO activities. Excuse my voice. Indeed, an extraordinary 1,337 out of 2,346 respondents, or 57%. If the roles are changing, they are still firmly IO roles. Thus, IO education and training is needed more than ever. Further, Hallam's figures show that these IO activities are particularly prevalent in the special and school sectors, where supervision and on-the-job training may be most lacking. If external support for the development of adequate IO skills and knowledge is required, the next question is, from where is this to come? Clearly, information professionals cannot be comprehensively prepared for all these new and old roles during their basic LIS diploma or degree. On the other hand, this course is likely to be their most important single source of development, so it's vital that the students receive as useful a foundation in IO as possible. It needs to be a foundation that prepares would-be professionals not only for the immediate workplace, but also for continuous and lifelong learning. With this in place, it is then vital for education and training providers to offer a wide range of rich, continuing professional development opportunities that fit individual lives and learning styles. The remainder of this paper discusses the two questions. First, what coverage of the IO field should be included in the entry-level LIS course? And second, how might additional IO skills and knowledge needed for tomorrow's IO roles be developed after library school? Harvey and Reynolds surveyed university-level LIS courses in Australia as offered in 2002, identifying those subjects that focused on IO. They found that of the 26 courses, 18 required one semestral subject, but only 7 courses offered 2. The authors went on to classify the subjects in terms of their content as per this table. And I will be rattling through some of these tables, so I'm glad to hear that the PowerPoint will be available. You can see that Australian library schools were offering a mix of broader and narrower focused IO subjects in 2002, and it's likely that this mix continues, though if anything, the library-orientated classes are giving way to those that deal with the management of metadata and organisation of information resources from a wider perspective. Evidence of this trend was also found in responses by LIS academics to Harvey and Reynolds' questionnaire. One educator said, "We now try to teach principles of organisation which the students can then take away and apply using whatever tools are appropriate in the workplace they find themselves in." This trend is contrasted with the relative conservatism of the TAFE courses, which continue to focus on traditional cataloguing practice. According to the responses reported by Harvey and Reynolds, it was perhaps not so much that IO educators dismissed the value of traditional cataloguing education, but rather that there was simply no longer enough room in the curriculum for it, particularly in the graduate diploma courses, given the importance of other areas of information retrieval. There was thus a consensus that there would be little choice but for the educational base provided by a first professional qualification to be supplemented by on-the-job training and the take-up of professional development opportunities. However, this still does not address the question of what every library school student should be taught, that is, what elements of IO should the compulsory curriculum cover. It is clear that there is a lack of room for the detailed application of numerous bibliographic and metadata standards, nor is there a need for every graduate to be so conversant with them. Nevertheless, there can be no theory without application, and a broader perspective must still include some content. The OPAC remains one of the most common tools of information retrieval in many, if not most, libraries. Cataloguing involves the application of many key IO principles that remain relevant. It's highly desirable for all information professionals to appreciate these IO principles and to appreciate how they're applied by their fellow professionals, and in many cases this means through the use of standards such as the Dewey Decimal Classification and the Anglo-American Cataloguing Rules. The Australian Council on Cataloguing, ACOC, is concerned that a first professional LIS qualification in Australia no longer guarantees any working knowledge of key bibliographic standards, and that some university-level courses do not offer any opportunity for students wishing to learn specifically the elements of cataloguing as it is still practiced. The option to study a TAFE subject or set of subjects is not a valid alternative. There are elements of cataloguing practice that are not covered at TAFE and are not intended to be. They involve the exercise of professional judgment and a level of expertise that deserves professional recognition. Students of the introductory IO subject should have learned this and learned to appreciate the skill required to create high-quality metadata. To this end, ACOC has drafted a position statement calling on LIS university departments in Australia to at least cover in their core curricula the rudimentary application of key bibliographic standards. It also wishes to see all students given the opportunity to learn more about the craft of cataloguing wherever there is room in the curriculum, even if the only way is for departments to share a particular subject. And there's the URL for the paper, but I understand you've got copies already. Looking at professional development, if entry-level LIS courses need to be supplemented by professional development or PD courses in specific aspects of information organisation, we need to identify any gaps in PD provision and any reasons why PD opportunities fail or are not taken up. To this end, HIDER conducted two surveys amongst cataloguers and cataloguing managers. The first survey was administered in 2004 and was targeted at existing IO professionals in Australia and North America. An online questionnaire was disseminated through two international and two Australian cataloguing lists, and 213 responses were collected. The practitioners were asked about how they sought to develop and update their expertise and about the support they received for doing so. There were remarkably few significant differences between the responses made by Australian and American catalogers. And this is where I'm going to have to rattle through at a rate of knots. The PD activities undertaken by respondents are listed here in this table. A high proportion was taking short courses, though not necessarily very frequently. And of course, respondents to this survey are likely to be particularly interested in doing so. You can also see that cataloguers were interested in developing their skills and knowledge through a variety of outlets. The next table shows topic areas covered by the respondents' PD activities. Many of the most covered were of a traditional nature. Table 4 shows topic areas in which respondents wanted to develop further. PD opportunities in a broad range of both traditional and non-traditional areas were in demand. A large majority of respondents, 70%, were also interested in PD outside of the IO skill set. A key finding of the survey was that employer support for PD activities was felt to be minimal or poor by 40% of respondents. Further, an uncomfortably high 38% of respondents felt that their expertise was inadequately recognised by the library and information profession, perhaps a related finding. Another issue was PD provision. A lack of worthwhile PD opportunities was also identified as a problem by 40% of respondents. The good news was that despite all this, 81% were either fairly satisfied or very satisfied with their jobs, and only 21% were aiming to leave the IO field within the next few years, though the percentage was significantly higher amongst the Australian respondents. Finally, respondents were asked the most likely reason why they would end up leaving the IO field. A lack of PD opportunities was cited by several respondents. The second survey, conducted in 2005, targeted Australian library managers and focused on training needs and provision for the more traditional areas of bibliographic organisation. An online questionnaire was disseminated through appropriate lists and 165 responses were received from a wide range of libraries. Results showed that the current level of catalogue and PD provision does not fully meet demand, and that more short courses and longer programmes are required. Almost half the libraries did not provide any on-the-job training. However, many library managers were not prepared or were unable to spend large sums of money on staff training or staff time on cataloguing training, even if quality offerings existed, which limits the success of more advanced courses. Amongst the barriers to more advanced development appeared to be a lack of appreciation on the part of some managers of the value of advanced cataloguing training. About a third of the libraries had sent staff on short courses over the previous 12 months. Topic areas for which library managers expressed an interest in terms of short course provision are listed in Table 6. The popularity of a large number of areas is a challenge for the few PD providers in Australia, and a coordinated approach to demand may be in order. Significantly, over two-thirds of respondents were interested in online courses, whether short or long. Thus, there remains a need and a demand for PD opportunities across the traditional areas, but these opportunities should be based on flexible modes of learning as far as possible. What both these surveys showed was that Australian cataloguers had not given up on traditional cataloguing, though they were also interested in developing their knowledge and skills in new areas of IO, as well as in areas outside of IO. However, PD provision does not appear to fully meet all of these demands and needs. Furthermore, there also appears to be a gap between the expectations of cataloguers and some of their employers, who are not always prepared to provide the support cataloguers consider necessary in order for them to further develop or maintain their expertise in the IO field. In summary, you'll be glad to hear, trainers and educators in the IO field need to provide as broad a range of PD opportunities, both in terms of topic and mode, as possible. But just as critically, all of us in the field need to convince the rest of the information profession and our employers of the value that IO brings to the various services and activities we support, and that whether traditional or new, IO work involves high levels of skill and effort that have to be learned over time. And I'll leave you with the draft statement. Thank you.
We have about 5 minutes for questions and comments, and we are very interested in your views on this topic. I think it's something we've been discussing for some time, and I think there at times it's controversial. So we'd be interested in your comments on the position paper and any other comments you'd like to make on this topic of education for cataloguing and metadata creation. Please, comments. This is your opportunity. Pam
Gatenby, National Library. I'd like to ask Gillian to elaborate a little bit more on her comment that there's evidence that young graduates become quickly disillusioned, and whether you have evidence that that applies also to the library profession, to cataloguers, I guess.
Yes, what can we do about it? Certainly it's anecdotal. I suppose there's lots of different... Part of the problem, I think, is the different range of courses within Australia. That comes down to one of the key factors where we've got undergraduate programs, graduate diplomas, masters, and the employment opportunities are very much, very often, just at the beginner level. And so there's, from my perspective, and from a pilot survey we've done for the institutions, employers don't differentiate between the type of graduate that they're actually employing in terms of the professional qualification. They're then looking at other types of things as well. So anecdotally, certainly our best graduates, a lot of them don't stay in the profession terribly long. But I don't know that's necessarily a bad thing. If they're taking their skill set with them into other areas as well, then they're actually sort of viral marketing what the, you know, if it's positive. A lot are going overseas, and that's part of the much bigger picture of education debt and things like that, so that if they move overseas, they don't have to repay anything back for their studies. And so the brightest and best work that one out, and therefore they go. Obviously, then they can do that career growth and then come back in at a higher salary level if they are going to come back into Australia and therefore can afford that debt greater. I mean, there's a lot of the issues are beyond the actual library school. That's the whole thing, that we're not sort of free, I think you probably agree. There are lots of other factors that impinge on how academics run their programs these days. It's not actually just about what we like in the course. We don't, you know, we're not autonomous. I think it differs from the American situation quite substantially, where a lot of the library schools are still autonomous and can roll, you know. A lot of schools here are coming down to courses within faculties, and so different types of factors are impinging on the way that academic life is run. So no, it would be interesting. There's a survey at the moment in America, again in North Carolina, again funded by the ILMS. Part of a lot of the research is very generously funded by the Institute of Museum and Library Studies over there, and they've got $1 million grant to actually look at the whole career track things of all of the graduates coming out of North Carolina. So that will be interesting to try and capture some of that data as who stays in the profession. We were hoping with the Nexus survey that we would track some of the people who'd moved out. But it still seemed to be primarily people within the profession who responded, not very many from outside. So that's an argument in its own right. But again, research costs money as well. You know, so there's issues there. So yes, there's different aspirations, I suppose, that does need to be considered in terms of all human beings, and that has to be a player in terms of what people get out of their careers and what they want to strive for. So, as I say, it's really that brightest, you know, how do we keep those really, really good ones? Yeah.
Oh. One up the back, I understand.
Amelia McKenzie from National Library. I'm interested to know, given the relatively low proportion of course content relating to information organisation, what that content actually is, and how, what was the thinking that led to the reduction of that content? What sort of workplace or work skills were the curriculum designers thinking of when they made those decisions? Now, this may not be a sensible question, but perhaps Gillian and Stuart can interpret it for us.
Are you familiar with that, Philip?
I think it depends very much on the library science school. We've, as the biggest school in Australia, we've got a reputation, I think, for being more traditional than, say, QUT and UTS. So we were probably slower to move away from some of the traditional areas. We did, to a certain extent, a few years ago, in that the introductory IO subject that we run now is the kind of generic subject that Philip referred to, where we're trying to get across general principles that can be applied not just to say bibliographic standards, but elsewhere in the workforce. So the focus is very much on metadata, using Dublin Core, and to a certain extent thesaurus construction, because it was felt that gives students a good introduction into the idea of subject approach to information, to taxonomies and so on, which can be widely applied. What we did do is we retained our traditional, if you like, cat and class subject, but made it the second subject that the students do. Now, the dilemma for us is that in the undergraduate programme, which has more content, we can actually have core subjects in both. And that was something that Alia, actually, the recognition panel that visited, was actually keen on. The fact that we were actually maintaining two subjects within the core curriculum. We can't do that in postgraduate courses, as you know. The graduate diploma, which is embedded in the master's programme, there are simply so many demands on curriculum. And it's one of the things that we're currently really hitting our heads against the wall about, because we're looking to further course revision and desperately want to keep some sound IO principles in there, but there's simply not the opportunity to get down to the level of specific bibliographic tools. Certainly not the kind of level that the profession still requires, which is why we're looking to areas like professional development.
Yes. We're just going to run, say, 5 minutes over time, but we'll take that out of your lunch break, I'm sorry.
If I can just add to that, again, we moved from the graduate diploma to a master's just to be able to expand the curriculum by 50%. Of course, that means further debt to the students of 50%. You know, that increases alongside that. And what we've tried to do with our curriculum design is have it more holistic, so that these different elements will occur in different units, subjects, in different ways. So there's one on database, organisational databases and things like that, as well as one on information organisation, as well as one on information retrieval. And so the bits of the jigsaw puzzle have to come together. It's not so much like it's being discrete little boxes that you only get certain content in certain areas. And I think that's a trend across higher education probably today as well. But
question from...
Paul Pretor, University of Ballarat. Thank you, Gillian and Stuart, for reading out Philip's paper. Two really incredibly important papers, surveys, and a stock take of our current situation. Thank you. Educational content is fine. However, in my experience with two library technicians who I supervise, who did not have any formal cataloguing subject experience in their coursework, The difference, in my experience, is the motivation, the sticking power, the perseverance, and a sense of imagination and personal responsibility in being able to contribute to crafting, shaping metadata and the OPAC and the discovery experience compared to, of course, known item searching. This, in my experience, has been the difference, the motivation, the sticking power, the perseverance, the imagination. So what potential strategies might complement the educational content that you've talked about in order to maximise the recruit, retain and lead of cataloguers?
That's right. And also you've got that paraprofessional education, which is quite different again from what's happening in higher education as well. I don't know. Certainly my philosophy is that what you do at university is just the beginning. It's not the end piece of paper that's going to keep you, you know, satisfied for the rest of your career. And therefore it is incumbent on employers to continue to scaffold and develop individuals along the way. And I think there's been a bit of a drop-off in the past 20 years as to some of those responsibilities. So that certainly, from my angle, is getting the students to understand that it doesn't stop here. It's lifelong learning, and you've got to sort of move forward into those areas. I don't know. I mean, certainly.
Just quickly, Stuart, we do have to finish, but please, your turn.
Well, just a quick point. I'm not quite sure how to address the question, but certainly one of the things I've noticed is that some of the new opportunities that are coming to some libraries, and I'm thinking particularly of university libraries, for example, with the development of information repositories, there are new opportunities for IO professionals, and that's something that does cause some excitement, because really the developments like that, and because of the current focus on research at universities, developments like that are really bringing libraries to the fore and allowing them to really show off their skill sets. So maybe that sort of engagement may...
I certainly want to just to keep going. Sorry. One of the trends that's certainly happening with QUT is the skill shortage is beginning to hit. So students are picking up work very early on. While they're still studying. And I think that's where there's a lot of scope for the partnership to happen, to get that engagement between what the job is about and then what the study will bring. And the employment situations can then benefit from that, from new ideas that are actually coming through from the students as well, if they're listened to and can work on projects specifically in that type of area. I think that's possibly one strategy that we could work very strongly with employers to strengthen in the future, so that they do come out with the skills and the attitudes that they need. And that we get the best people into the course, you see.
Thanks, Jill. We do have to cut it there. I'm sorry, we are running a little over time. But I said it'll come out of your lunch break. I'd like to... I'm aware that we've put both Jill and Stuart under a lot of stress trying to get through their papers very quickly. But they were able to impart a lot of information in that time, and I wish we had more time to discuss it. Thank you very much, Jill.
Thank you. And Stuart.